Your first choice is a guidebook of sorts, but it's satire from 1980. Could you tell us about the official preppy handbook?
It is a book that had a profound effect on me when I read it in the 1980s, because it was the first work of, I suppose, cultural anthropology that I had read. Because even though it's a very cheeky book, very funny, it's also very precise, and it's very well researched, and it really describes the sort of Mayflower wasp culture in America.
To take a step back for just a moment, for listeners who may not know exactly what we're talking about, how would you describe a preppy or the prep aesthetic? What are we talking about here?
It's people who have nicknames like Buffy. They wear loafers without socks. They vacation in Martha's Vineyard. I mean, Lisa Birnbach even says in the introduction, in a true democracy, everyone can be upper class and live in Connecticut, which, of course, is not true.
How old were you when you first read it?
I was probably 11 or 12 years old. It was soon after the book came out. And I remember that I was at summer camp with some people who really do belong to this preppy tribe. And they would read it to try to become preppier, you know, to do the thing that they were already doing better.
To do it right.
In much the way that I've heard that mafiosos watch mafia movies to become more mafia-like. But anyway, the Preppy Handbook really, I think, was the first book that took me out of my own world and made me realize that daily life is something that can be decoded and studied. And I think that's essentially what I do as a journalist and as a writer.
Your second choice is called Perfect Madness, Motherhood in the Age of Anxiety, and it's written by Judith Warner. Tell us about this book.
Well, I actually read this book when I was pregnant. It came out in 2005, and it was the book that put a name on and described this phenomenon of intensive parenting that had begun about 10 years earlier in America. Judith Warner described it as, quote, that caught-by-the-throat feeling so many mothers have today of always doing something wrong. That the problem wasn't that mothers weren't trying hard enough. The problem was that, you know, we don't have national maternity leave in America, for example.
Do you remember a moment of seeing something in the book that was a lightning rod for you of recognition?
Well, she described lots of women who had no free time because they were spending all of it basically driving their kids around to different activities, and that the kids were ungrateful and entitled, and that the mothers were kind of withering under the strain of it all and not taking care of themselves and losing the connection with their husbands. And, you know, I had friends who were, you know, 33 years old and successful in their careers and who had basically stopped working entirely to put all this energy into raising their children. And they were doing it with the same kind of professionalism that they had previously done their jobs. And I think some kind of balance in your life between being a mom and being a worker and being a spouse, a lover, is healthy for the whole family. I mean, you know, it's still fairly new that most mothers work. And in some ways, I think the infrastructure in America and the thinking about the issue in America has not caught up with the reality of women's lives.
Your third choice is a little different from the books we've been discussing. It's called The Story of the 27th Division by John F. O'Ryan. And this is a book that we might actually have a hard time finding if we were just to go to our public library shelves.
It's a compilation of the military orders for the American 27th Army Division. It is literally the field reports from individual officers from June 1916 to October 1918.
Tell me about your connection to the story of the 27th Division.
Well, my father's father died in the 1950s before I was born. I never really knew much about him, except that I did know that he had been a soldier in World War I. So I decided, because it's the anniversary year for the start of World War I, and I needed a column, as I do every month, that I would investigate.
And what did you find out?
I focused on his last battle. He was part of a team that was attacking what was known as the Hindenburg Line, which was the most fortified part of the German front. On the morning of September 27th, 1918, my grandfather, this Russian-born newspaper delivery man with 3 weeks training, was standing on the front lines and was told to basically just walk forward and advance and try to break through. You can tell in the reports, the field reports from that day, almost immediately, hundreds of men from the 106th Infantry were kind of lost in the haze of barbed wire and shelling and mortar fire. 200 men from my grandfather's unit were killed, and another 399 were wounded, and 81 were gassed. It was by far the highest number of casualties for that period. And I spent a lot of time talking to my uncle. My grandfather, because he was born in Russia, did not know when his birth date was. He had always said to my uncle and my father, when they asked when his birthday was, he would say, oh, let's just call it September 27th. And it was only through working on this article and doing this research alongside my uncle that we realized that the reason he said that is because September 27th was that morning when he was at 5:30 a.m. getting ready to charge the Hindenburg Line.
Pamela Druckerman, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Page Turners.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.